Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Will Easton for the vacationing rhino today. We'll be guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Will.
Good morning. It's a warm one for the middle of November.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of surprising. I think we got some squalls moving this way. I looked at that this morning. A narrow line that is tracking across the state of Texas, headed our way for a little rain, and then going to cool it down.
And then after that, it will finally feel like fall. We had one day that I can remember that has felt like fall. Everything else has been really hot. In fact, yesterday I was closing the blinds because my house was, while I was trying to watch football, I was trying to watch the Saints whip up on the Cleveland Browns, and it was too hot in the house because the sun was coming through on November 17th, which I didn't expect.
Yeah, that is quite unusual. It was a relatively delightful day, though. It wasn't all that bad. Certainly better than that August and September heat we had, but we're here. Quick check of the markets. The Dow has turned positive. It started out in the red after a big sell-off on Friday. The S&P sitting at 58.97. I heard a prediction this morning from one of the investment analysts that we're headed north of perhaps 7,000 over the next 12 months for the S&P. It's already a little frothy, but it's based on technicals. They really are optimistic, many in the investment community, that earnings are going to continue to be strong. The economy actually not all that bad, depending on how you measure the economic conditions and status. But from a certainly from a corporate profitability perspective, from a GDP perspective, unemployment perspective, ain't bad. Now, inflation is a little higher. In October, it came in a little higher than September, 2.4% CPI in September, 2.6% in October. And that's what got the markets all upset, because that sort of signals that maybe the Fed will not be as aggressive in cutting the benchmark interest rate. So I just saw an analyst here, Will, in the I got the Business Channel on, that's being interviewed right now. He said 6,600 on the S&P by the end of the year, the so-called melt-up is what it's called. NVIDIA's got earnings coming out Wednesday. I think they're going to destroy expectations. I really do. The orders coming into the graphics processing unit manufacturer, it turns out when Huang designed these things for video games, he had no idea at the time, honestly, that they were going to be so well suited for artificial intelligence. Didn't have any idea. And it turns out, I mean, it was originally they were just designed to kind of make the experience of playing video games or even watching high definition, super rich content video a better experience, really, just one that you could bear. So the chips themselves are sort of optimized around pixelization and drawing the pixels. No idea did he have at the time. He's talked about it, by the way. He's a fascinating individual. He being, by the way, the CEO, founder of NVIDIA. He also discusses his background. This, of course, is totally contrary to the Democrat common talking point that the 1,000 billionaires in this country all inherited that wealth, which is completely false, by the way. Three-quarters or more of them, self-made. He being one of them, he discusses, I watched it this weekend, his experience before he founded NVIDIA as a janitor.
That's right, he was.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool. So he just says, you know, he goes on to make the point, which needs to be made over and over and over again, only in this country can you be a janitor. Dishwasher as well, I think he was in his prior career. And come up with an idea and then see that idea to commercialization and fruition and become a billionaire. The Democrats don't like that. Got wealthy. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, because he produces stuff that people want. The orders, it's a $100 billion company today. They're already looking at orders over the next year from their primary customers, who were, of course, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft. These are the people who buy the chips because they are installed indirectly in the machines that either those companies, the servers that they build. They build their own custom-made machines, and they also buy machines from the commercial server manufacturers. But that's who uses their products primarily. $300 billion of orders expected, he said, next year. That's tripling the size of the company at the top line. That's just fascinating to me. It's so exciting. I mean, I get excited, as you could tell, about this because this is American innovation. This is American ingenuity. This is American capitalism at work, providing benefit to society. And lots of people getting wealthy at it. So he also said, let me make sure I get this right, Will. He said in an interview he did that 76% of NVIDIA employees are millionaires, with one out of three having a net worth north of $20
million. Wow.
That's incredible. So this is what the left doesn't get. All this rich CEOs, they're keeping all the money for themselves, and nobody's allowed to participate. 76% of his staff are millionaires.
That reminds me of like the early days of Microsoft when you know, janitors would take stock options instead of raises.
Yeah.
And you know, a couple years later, they're millionaires.
Yeah, I knew a couple of folks that were in the work for Microsoft in the early days, just developers, software developers, that all ended up. Heck, this was before the year 2000. I knew these guys in the 90s, and they were all multimillionaires at the time. But we're digressing a bit. I would say perhaps that over there at MSNBC, that's the network, of course, that features our friend the race lady, Joy. I call her that because everything's about race to her. You may have seen this, but perhaps an olive branch is being extended.
Yeah.
Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe, and his wife Mika, they just announced that they met with the president-elect Trump this past Friday. And this is the first time in 7 years, by the way. And they intend to have open communications.
Well, I'll find the audio, but he said some interesting things on there. Number one, that he called then-candidate Trump after the assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That he talked to him after the morning after
That's right.
the assassination attempt. Joe Scarborough said that he called him just to, you know, check on him and make sure everything was all right. But yeah, first time in 7 years, they actually went down to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
To talk to President Trump, and he said that we didn't see eye to eye on many things.
Yeah.
But, you know, we extended our hand and said, hey, we got to do this together. And I will say this, that the faithful on Twitter and Blue Sky of Joe Scarborough, not very happy about
it. No, they're not at all, which is crazy. But Scarborough, I think, is right in pursuing it. So, Will, I wasn't doing this back then, but during the Trump presidency, The last year was filling in some. But, heck, that was the heyday for the left-wing news media, wasn't it? Because they had something every day because Mr. Trump was up all night tweeting. Yeah. And that was like their headline story every day. There's another tweet. This is going to give them like a continuous stream of content. And their viewers just eat that stuff up as well.
Hey, well, there's a couple interesting little nuggets. Number one, Joe was one of the first people to really see that Trump had a chance.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember watching him, and it was, you know, Rubio was in there, Cruz, obviously, and some others. And I remember them saying, the crowds that he's bringing to these rallies is impressive. You need to keep your – and at the time, Trump was still kind of like – you know, it was a publicity stunt.
They were being...
And he was one of the first people to say, no, I think this is for real.
Totally clear-eyed about it. Absolutely, yes. no doubt about it. Of course, now the party appears to be in disarray, blaming other people, pointing fingers, really no de facto leader. We're stepping aside for a break on middays. We're just getting started. We've got State Auditor Shad White in the Element Wealth Studio at 11:05.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's middays. We are in the Element Wealth Studio today. We're in the studio every day this week, except Wednesday. We got the Innovate Mississippi's annual Accelerate Conference. Looking forward to hosting remote for that. I'll get you some more information on that. In a little bit, but that is an annual event. I think we've hosted the show there. This will be the second or third time. Looking forward to
it. At the Westin, I believe.
At the Westin downtown. Yeah, always a lot of fun. The a lot of folks will are concerned that mortgage rates still haven't moderated, given that Chairman Fed Powell, Fed Chairman, and the Board of Governors reduced the benchmark Fed funds rate. Usually that when that happens in the aftermath, the 10-year Treasury bill, which is what drives mortgage interest rates, also pulls back. But it didn't. It's actually gone up. And that's causing lots of consternation out there in the mortgage markets because people expected that mortgage rates, which are tied to the 10-year, would pull back, but they haven't. In fact, they've gone the other way, and that's largely because bond investors just aren't convinced that this inflation thing is over with. On Friday, the 10-year was up to 4.43%, and that, again, still is too high to get mortgage interest rates down in the fives. That's generally considered sort of the range that would really boost the housing market considerably. But that's what's going on right now. In the meantime, Mr. Trump just released, he's been doing interviews over the last week or so, his potential picks for Treasury Secretary. This will be a big one. Kevin Warsh is one. This is a brand new one. He was a former Federal Reserve governor. Hadn't seen him among the list. Mark Rowan, Apollo Global Management CEO. Howard Lutnick, he's been on the list rather consistently. He's the Cantor Fitzgerald CEO. And Scott Bissent, who's a billionaire investor. I like Bissent a lot. Stephen Moore, who was among the Council of Economic Advisors in the first Trump term. This morning I heard on an interview with him his endorsement of Besant. And he actually said, hey, Mr. President-elect, if you're listening, and he does. This was on Varney and Company, and he's talked before, you know, President-elect Trump about tuning into Varney and Company. He likes Varney. And he said, if you're listening, you need to pick Scott Besant as your Treasury Secretary. Now, a little other side notes. Howard Lutnick, the Cantor Fitzgerald CEO, you may recall the firm, investment firm Cantor Fitzgerald, they were the folks that lost lots of employees in the 9/11 attack. Their entire operation, their headquarters operation, was located in one of the towers. A significant number went down and lost their lives in the 9/11 attack. Apollo Global Management used to be called Apollo Resources. They're a private equity firm, big-time private equity firm, maybe third or fourth largest in terms of their investment portfolio, their assets. I had the honor and privilege of pitching them when I was looking for capital. Apollo Resources, a fabulous firm up there in Manhattan. Mark Rowan, that's brand new, added to the list. And then Kevin Warsh, former Federal Reserve governor. Some of the other names that were on the list apparently have been removed, and I think that's just the series of interviews conducted last week and the process of elimination. We got we've got a new White House press secretary.
Yeah.
How about that? I believe that she is the youngest ever. 27 years old. How about that? What an honor that is to be tapped by the president-elect, Caroline Leavitt, her name. And she was a spokesperson for the campaign, right, throughout the campaign. She's very, very smart, very articulate. I think she'll do fantastic. You know, the best thing I can say about these appointments is that, unlike the current president, there doesn't appear to be any DEI involved. You know, I've said it many times. We've got to have one of them, one of those, one of them. Without regard for qualifications or experience or merit or capabilities. I mean, just look at Buttigieg. Is there any doubt that he was selected because of his sexual orientation? Is there any doubt that Rachel Levine was selected because of his transgenderism? Is there any doubt that Kamala Harris was selected to be his running mate because of her race and gender?
The biggest jump is going to be Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah.
Deb, I think it's Holland or Haaland or whatever.
Yeah.
Completely unqualified.
Totally.
Totally unqualified. So Doug Burgum is going to be the new Secretary of the Interior. A lot of these are like, Buttigieg was the one, though, because he was the most vocal, I would say that.
Agreed.
You know, he went on a lot of talk shows.
He did.
But I will tell you where he lost me, is the racist Rhodes.
Right.
Rhodes are racist.
Yeah, I agree with you.
He sat up there on that podium and was describing how Rhodes can be racist, and I'm thinking,
right.
What are we doing here?
And then remember, I thought he kind of bungled the chemical spill in Ohio. Remember that?
Yeah. He was on vacation or maternity leave or paternity leave, whatever it is.
Yeah,
he was gone, and somebody confronted him about it, and he, you know, whatever.
Well, there's no surprise. Out on social media, there's just all sorts of criticism and chastising from people who were totally aggrieved and bent out of shape about the fact that I don't think he's appointed a black person yet to any of his staff, right? And of course, that immediately gets described and framed as racist and racism, and I completely disagree with that. We've got to get away from this nonsense of any situation that even remotely appears to be imbalanced, being driven by bigotry and discrimination. that every single disparity in life can be explained by that. No, that's just not true. Totally not true. So, of course, he does have Vivek Ramaswamy, though he's not running an official government-funded public agency. He and Elon Musk partnering there, combining their respective skills to run the Department of Government Efficiency. They plan at least to take an axe to government up until and have their work done by July 4th, 2026. I think it's excellent. I don't think you could have two better picks. People who are used to getting things done in a hurry, don't let red tape stand in the way, etc. By the way, I just got to point this out. Kathy Hochul, the governor of the great state of New York, she and Trump have been kind of having a social media war about this congestion tax implemented in New York City for Manhattan. And it's really an effort to kind of curb the automobile travel into the area. You're going to have to pay a fee. Essentially a toll, if you will. And she said that she's saving hardworking people money because she's only going to impose this tax at $9 instead of $15. Only Democrats would see it that way. It's only going to be $9, not $15, and that's considered a savings. Like, how about zero? It's just unbelievable.
What if you're at a waiter at a downtown restaurant?
I don't know. It's totally insane. That's just always how they address problems.
If you're a janitor down there and you have to take your car, you can't take public transportation.
No, it's terrible. Totally terrible. By the way, you've probably seen that President Biden has authorized Ukraine to use Army Tactical Missile Systems, ATACMS, the acronym. Those are long-range missiles to attack Russia. And a lot of folks are having problems with that. When we come back, we'll read you what Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker said about it. Stay with us. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio. Auditor Shad White at 11:05.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays. We're in the Element Well studio. So as we shared with you before we went to break, Joe Biden has just kind of out of the blue, well, just ordered that, hey, Ukraine, you can go use these U.S. military assets. I don't really understand how that works. Are like they in Ukraine? Do we give them to them and say, okay, but you can't use these unless we tell you to? I don't really know all the background on that.
Who knows? Maybe they had the capability to go one distance and they
could be.
You know, now but, they can go deeper into Russia.
But that was authorized by President Joe Biden, I believe yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Senator Roger Wicker, the senior senator from the great state of Mississippi, issued a statement. I'll read it to you. If initial press reports are true, I am encouraged at the prospect of allowing Ukraine to use long-range missiles supplied by the U.S. This does not excuse the administration's deliberate slow-walking of items and assistance long authorized by Congress for use against Putin's illegal aggression. This devastating conflict could have been ended on terms benefiting the U.S. and NATO if Mr. Biden had listened to the counsel of bipartisan majorities in the House and Senate. So it certainly would appear that the senator supports this action by the president. I don't know. I get the feeling that's probably not a popular position. Seems like it just perhaps escalates our involvement even more in this conflict. And in fact, I think I saw a report that Vladimir Putin of Russia says, yeah, if you do this, we're going to consider this essentially an aggressive act by NATO, even though Ukraine's not in NATO, the U.S. is, and the fact that the U.S. is authorizing that, he's kind of connecting the dots there. What that means, I don't know exactly. And I don't really understand exactly why Joe Biden just kind of randomly, abruptly decided to do this. I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes. On the ceasefire text line, Ben from Madison says, just my opinion, but I think it's really a bad idea for the U.S. to get more involved in the Ukraine situation. It's time to de-escalate, not escalate the situation. Yeah, I would agree, and I don't know if, again, this is like preempting the future president. Maybe, I mean, I've thought through the range of theories. Is this to perhaps force a truce so that this conflict's ended under his watch and President-elect Trump, once in the White House, in office, doesn't have any opportunity, I guess, to end the conflict as he has promised, in which case he'd be credited for it? Could be that. Who knows? I mean, it seems like the American people should get a little bit more explanation from the White House on what's going on here. I mean, as soon as he did this and he authorized this, I believe the president should have been at the podium. Of course, it's not his nature. You know, they don't want him out there, and he's a lame duck president. I'm sure all that's factoring in, but you're still the president, and you have an obligation. You have a duty.
He made an appearance yesterday in the jungle, it looked like. I don't know if you saw this, but it's...
Oh, my God.
He's dressed like he's in Jurassic Park. The first movie, and then he like wanders off back into the woods. Hope is, you know, the guy that ate his uncle is not lurking in the jungle somewhere.
It's crazy.
I can't really, that's the best way I can paint it. I don't know what he was doing out there. Something about climate change.
But, oh my gosh!
It's fairly obvious that the spigot is going to be turned off for Ukraine.
Yeah,
and they're pretty much just giving them everything before January 20th,
well,
the handover of power.
And the president-elect did condemn this action, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't have his exact statement in front of me, but he did condemn it. On the ceasefire text line, Gerard, President Trump should pick you for Department of Treasury. Well, I appreciate the thought. Not sure my skills are quite up to that task, but let's be honest. Well, in the last administration, that's been relatively irrelevant,
yeah,
that you possess the skills. If the president should call on me, I'm certainly willing to serve this great country. I don't expect that, but I appreciate the thought. You know, the DNC, they're reeling a will over the amount of money that was spent. I mean, now it's being revealed $1.5 billion the Harris campaign spent to lose. $1.5 billion.
So it's jumped up to $1.5 billion.
Yeah, the reports I saw this morning increased it from $1 to $1.5 billion. One was kind of the number you saw reported, and these are reputable sources that now peg it at $1.5 billion for what, 3 months, essentially? $2.6 million in the last, like, 2 weeks on private jet travel. You see that? The insane amount of money. And now the DNC is laying off, mass layoffs. Wait, our old buddy Robert Reich, the communist that he is, he always blasts private companies anytime they have a reduction in force. The CEO's making blah, blah, blah. They just ought to take his pay and pay these people for doing nothing.
Yeah, I wonder what he would think about Oprah's company, Harpo Productions, getting $2.5 million. You remember, it was originally
a million. Now it's
$2.5 million.
The insane amount of money they spent on these celebrities, which produced nothing for them. So now the DNC union, they're unionized. They've issued a statement. Despite record-breaking fundraising, the DNC failed to provide any financial support to those who have already... tirelessly served the Democratic Party and its mission. Bravo to them. This is so hypocritical, isn't it? Because don't they always blast the private sector and conservatives and people who believe in free enterprise? They're always blasting about, oh, the suppression of wages and the oppression of workers, and all the money goes to the top echelon in a company and all that sort of, at the expense of that. Well, what happened here? All the money went to a terrible candidate who was jetting around. And a bunch. Do you see the other report?
Yeah, I'm reading them right now.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Like all kinds of expensive meals and stuff.
$9,600 on food and drinks at Pebble Bar near Rockefeller Center, which counts celebs Pete Davidson. In March, let's see, $62,000 in room and catering fees at the posh five-star Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, when Biden was still running for office. A luxury king bedroom complete with soaking tub that currently runs at $500 a night. $6,000 for a site fee, whatever that is, at a coffee shop in Tempe, Arizona, where Minnesota Governor Tim Walz made a campaign stop to press college students to turn out the vote on Election Day. At least $12,000 on ice cream pints. $12,000.
Unbelievable.
$12,000 on food delivery from Uber Eats and DoorDash. They got all these people working. They can't send somebody down to the Little Caesars and get a pizza? Get
unbelievable.
A couple pizzas?
But this is who you want running the budget. It's just this reckless spending that occurred in this short, compressed period of time suggests to me, indicates to me very strongly, this person's incapable, which was always my gripe about Kamala Harris. It has nothing to do with her race and her gender and all that sort of stuff. It has to do with her lack of qualifications.
Where the real scandal is giving $500,000 to Al Sharpton's group, and then later he gets an interview with her. And they don't disclose during this interview that, hey, she just gave $500,000 to my political action, my national, it's called National Action Network. It's his nonprofit.
Yeah. So you've seen, no doubt, a lot of folks have, that Ramaswamy and Elon Musk have wasted no time in exposing some of the outrageous, almost laughable government spending. The New York Post had a great expose. And some of that, honestly, even a grant to my alma mater, Ole Miss, like studying monkeys on methamphetamine or something insane like that. I have to look it up to be sure. I don't want to mischaracterize it. But and all that amounts to real money. But this is a report that just came out from the Congressional Budget Office. This just blows me away. $516 billion appropriated this fiscal year to programs that are expired under federal law. About half of the authorized appropriations in the report expired at least 10 years ago, and the oldest, 1980. How could that be? I don't even get that. How in the world can the Congress appropriate money to expired programs? And this has been going on for a while. This isn't anything new. I just can't even comprehend it. I certainly hope that Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is aware of this. Certainly is. It's a report that is provided to him by the Congressional Budget Office. And on top of that, something I've talked about many times is improper payments. $237 billion last year of improper payments. Earned income tax credits, PPP loans, unemployment benefits, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Down the list, money that went to people who really weren't qualified or eligible for it under law. This is insane. It's incompetence on steroids. Coming right back in the Element Well studio.
This is Brent Reed.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hey, hey. All right. Jump up. Get it.
we're going to be at the Innovate Mississippi 25th Annual Accelerate Conference on Technology Innovation at the Westin Jackson this Wednesday. They'll be exploring the latest advancements in technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship currently happening in Mississippi. To learn more and register for the event, visit accelerate.innovate.ms. That's accelerate.innovate.ms. Looking forward to that. So, yeah, on the C Spire text line, somebody said other people's money. That's absolutely true. That you don't take care of other people's money the way you do your own. And what we need are people in positions of power that have the purse strings that do treat that money that comes from their taxpayer constituents as if it is their own. And this is why I fully applaud Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk taking on this task with the Department of Government Efficiency. And look, folks are already nervous. There's no doubt about it. Now, what I would like to see happen, honestly, Will, is that it's so difficult, as you know, to terminate employees in the 3 million federal government workforce. 3 million. It's many of those have these contracts that are just unshakable. They're in one of the couple of unions. A few do have at-will employment agreements. That simply means that you can terminate a person for any or no reason whatsoever, without justification, without consequences. I know this will never happen, but something I've thought through, I'd love to see all 3 million terminated and then reapply for their job. And in their application, they should articulate in their CV, they should articulate their value proposition, of course, their qualifications. They should discuss and quantify, honestly, the value of the services they have been providing and justify it. Why should your job exist? Why should the agency, there are 428, it's crazy, distinct federal agencies, 428. I saw Ramaswamy say over the weekend, we don't need but 99. 99. That's eliminating a lot. And he said, yeah, we're going to delete, we're going to purge a lot of the federal agencies that are operating today. No, nobody's ever taken a look at it. That's part of the problem. It's just tradition. It's always been that way. It's the status quo. Just continues to march. So some of the crazy spending, the Post did a great article. The National Institute of Health had $33 million in a grant to a firm that runs Monkey Island, a colony of around 3,000 primates sent to research labs. How about $3.7 million to study monkeys and gambling? $12 million went to the University of Mississippi to test monkeys on methamphetamine. And a Florida lab received $477,000 to help fund research into transgender monkeys, males injected with female hormones. This is insanity. This is what the people voted to end immediately, if not sooner. And you know, this is garbage that provides no value to the taxpayers or society overall. None. Zero. But it's people who literally make a living shaking down the taxpayers. And this stuff gets inserted and buried in these gargantuan-sized bills that nobody even bothers to pay any attention to, but I guarantee you that Musk and Ramaswamy are. And you know something I started thinking about? What about the use of AI? Instead of reading these multi-thousand-page pieces of legislation looking for crazy stuff, you could see how you could create a large language model where you could use the various AI tools to review those mountains of documents and sniff out this kind of crap and take action. You can definitely see that.
NBC News back in the old days of Tom Brokaw, used to have this segment that they would do almost every day. It was called The Fleecing of America.
Yeah.
And they would always, like, point out some taxpayer-funded thing that was just insane. And I don't think they do that anymore, obviously.
Need to. A $20,000 grant in 22 to a center in Ecuador that was used for drag theater performances.
I mean, I could imagine now with the media the way that it is, social media, especially with Musk, is doing a segment constantly about these things and letting the people know that they're being fleeced.
They already said it. They're putting up a website. They're going to start exposing all this, and it's going to get massive attention. Fox News, Super Talk News is coming your way because it's the top of the hour. Auditor Shad White is next.
Your Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. And now. The talk that keeps Mississippi talking.
That's what I like to listen to.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert. Here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Winter is here again, oh Lord. Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We are live in the Element Well studio once again. It's a Monday. That means Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, is coming your way at 12:05. But right now, it's the state auditor of the great state of Mississippi, Shad White. Auditor, good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
Man, so you probably heard us out there in the green room. We've been discussing, certainly in the second half hour of our first hour of the broadcast, this crazy spending that occurs at the federal level. The one that got my attention in particular was $500 billion, now the CBO tells us, on expired programs. I don't even see how that happens.
Yeah. Well, frankly, I was more terrified of running into one of these meth monkeys at Ole Miss the next time.
How in the world? I mean, I'm embarrassed, honestly.
Are they on campus? Where do I find them? How do I avoid them? These are real questions. It's nuts reading about this stuff. And you know, I hate to say it, but as crazy as we think it is coming from the federal government, we see similar things happening in Mississippi with our taxpayer money. And that's the kind of stuff I've been pointing out for the last 2 years. Give you two examples from our alma mater, Ole Miss. We looked and dug into their DEI spending. Of course, they had over 20 DEI staffers. The top staffer was being paid more than the governor and lieutenant governor combined. And their biggest achievement, one of their biggest achievements last year, was handing out a grant for preschool social justice yoga. To study preschool social justice yoga. I have no idea what that is. That's not a far cry from the meth monkey scenario, you know. And so we see that, and we see our state taxpayer dollars going to pay for salaries for people that are doing this kind of stuff. And it's happening here in Mississippi. And as auditor, I know I can't change it. I can't go in and tell them, hey, you got to stop doing that. But I can shine a light on it. And that, to me, is what DOGE is going to do. Even if DOGE can't shut everything down, DOGE is going to go in, I hope, and identify all of this kind of waste. And that way, then we can start the big fight, the big legal battle to get a handle on all this stuff.
Well, speaking of the DEI stuff, I mean, it's something that, when I started doing the show back in 2020, all of this really got intensified and escalated throughout the public and private sector after the George Floyd incident. That's what really set it on the path that it's on today. But it's one thing to ensure that you're not discriminating. It's another when you're forcing it. And what
that's
these
right.
DEI groups do is they force diversity and equity and inclusion, which achieves nothing. Forced diversity, forced inclusion is not anything. When it
that's
happens
right.
organically and naturally, good. Great.
Yep.
That's the way it should work. But spending money to force it, which is what I feel like happened, can't we just do what has happened in Florida, I believe, and in Texas as an example, where they passed legislation that says we're not giving you any more money for this in higher ed, right?
That's right. North Carolina, Alabama, Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, Oklahoma.
Well, Florida and Texas, I think, sort of got it started,
right?
That's right,
yeah. And I'll give you an example from North Carolina. What they did specifically, they shut down spending on DEI, which is great, and then they took every penny that they were spending on DEI and decided to spend it on campus police to make their campuses safer. That's just common sense stuff. And unfortunately, what we did in Mississippi is after I started highlighting some of the DEI spending and you and I talked about it and how wasteful and frankly how dangerous it was to be putting on these ridiculous kinds of seminars that were trying to brainwash students, the legislature didn't do anything, didn't cut the funding like some of our other states around us did. So these programs at our universities decided to change their names. So instead of calling themselves DEI, they now call themselves, you know, opportunity and, you know, pink rainbows or whatever. I don't know. They changed the words. And now some of them have even said, well, you know, we're not really changing what we did. We just changed the label. A staffer at the University of Southern Mississippi came out and said that to the press. We're not changing what we were doing. We're just changing the label on the door. So we still have this problem in Mississippi. We still need the legislature to pass a bill that says no more spending money on this kind of stuff. And instead, let's get the money going to something that actually benefits students. If you want to help poor students get access to college, how about scholarships for poor students to get access to college? If you want to keep students safer on campus and let them feel more included in campus life, well, how about we put the money into campus police so students don't have to run around campus and fear if they're going to the next event on campus? Yeah. These are the kinds of common sense things we need to be doing, but unfortunately, common sense doesn't always win out, even in a state like Mississippi.
It's possible, Auditor, to draft legislation that would prevent this subversion that we're seeing now. I mean, it could be done, and we could root it out and expose it, say, no, that violates the specifics of the law, and you can't do that.
Yep, that's right. And that legislation exists. There was one bill that was pretty good that was filed by Senator Angela Hill in the state Senate last year. It died, unfortunately. But I looked at that bill a couple of days ago, and I saw, you know what, that's the kind of thing that we need to
be doing. Very straightforward, I remember.
Very straightforward. And if nothing else, that puts these universities on notice. Hey, there is legislation that has been passed into law that restricts your ability to spend money on this nonsense. And you can fight us on this, and you can quibble with the language in the law, but if we could get something like that into law, it forces them to think twice before they start shelling out our money into this stuff. That's been the focus of mine for the last couple of years, and that led, of course, into the big waste-cutting project that we did called Project Momentum, which came out last month. And you know, that's what we need at the federal level, too. That's what DOGE is going to become at the federal level, I think.
So the Project Momentum, is this something, Auditor, that you discussed with the legislature before you commissioned it, or you just did it on your own accord from your budget?
Tell us about that. Yep, that's right. So the state auditor, under the statute that governs my office, gives us broad authority to not only do audits, but also do pre-audits of financial activities, post-audits of financial activities, investigate the financial affairs. This is the kind of broad language that the auditor's statute says. And so what we did is I discussed this actually with the governor and started talking to him and said, you know, what we're thinking about doing is kind of what the state auditor's office did back in the 1990s, which is do a big study for waste in state government. And because it's been too long since we've done an audit focused specifically on waste, not necessarily on fraud or theft or misspending, like spending outside of the bounds of the law, but just waste, just fat. So had that conversation with him. He was excited about it because we're both fiscal conservatives, and it seemed like the natural next step to try to make government leaner and smarter. The reason I wanted to talk to him about it is that we ended up looking at a lot of the agencies that answer to the governor's office, because those are big agencies like Medicaid.
Yep.
So then we commissioned the report, used the budget from the auditor's office. We had been frugal with our money from the legislature for the past few years, and so we had that money sitting in our budget, and then deployed that against this project, pulled in some national experts. experts, a lot like the company that you used to work for, a consulting company. And once we started doing that, we were able to not only get data about the waste that's happening in Mississippi, not only uncover some problems that had not been widely talked about, like the amount of insurance that we pay on state office buildings, which is insanely high, but also compare that to other states around the country. So this team that we pulled in had helped Texas, had helped North Carolina, had helped other states right-size their state agencies, and we could then point to real data that said, yeah, everybody always complains about how many cars we have in state government, but how do we compare to states like Louisiana or Arkansas or Iowa? Are we doing better than them? Maybe we have a bunch of cars, but we're doing better than all the other states, and maybe that's a good thing. As it turns out, we're not doing better than other states. We're doing worse than those other three states that are very similar to us. So that was kind of the basis for the whole project.
Gotcha. So based on the findings, Auditor, are there some specific requests that you have made or intend to make of the legislature to start codifying in statute some changes here to address these issues?
Absolutely. So what I would say is when we finish the report, some of the recommendations are things that a state agency head could do on their own. So, for example, for one agency, we said you got three contracts doing the same thing, and one of those vendors is the cheapest. Get rid of two of them. And the agency head could do that on their own. So we had a ton of recommendations like that. But then separately, we had a ton of recommendations that would require some kind of legislative change. So I'll give you an example of the biggest one probably. The biggest one that we found was in education. Mississippi spends a higher percentage of our education K-12 dollars on administration than every other state in the South. That is simply unacceptable. And we have the highest paid state superintendent of education, but the lowest paid teachers. We have local superintendents who are making more money than the governor, and teachers in those school districts still going out of pocket to pay for their own classroom supplies. This makes no sense at all. So we'll have a couple of legislative options this year to throw at the legislature and say, hey, look, if you want to get a real handle on this, what you could do is something similar to what Texas does, which is to say for school districts that are losing students, you're capped on the amount of money you can spend on admin costs at the dollar amount that you're spending this year. So your overhead can't go up. Or you could say 50% of every dollar that you spend has to go to teacher salaries. That would boost the amount of money going into the classroom, cut the amount of money going into administration. Those are the kinds of ideas that we'll end up throwing at them.
Well, that's something that could be enacted into law.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Would have to be enacted in law to push those school districts.
Okay. Otherwise, they are kind of autonomous on that sort of stuff.
That's exactly right.
All right. We'll continue the discussion. On the other side of the break, we got Auditor Shad White in the Element Wealth studio.
Then on my feet. How, 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 how.
This is Brent Cow.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Everyone, it's Middays. We're in the Element Well studio. We've got the State Auditor of Mississippi, Shad White, as our guest. So you hear folks, and I got one on the C Spire tax line, a message here, Auditor, the zero-based budgeting, for example, is something. Should we adopt that in the state of Mississippi?
I think all of those kinds of ideas are great. Zero-based budgeting, forcing more employees to justify their employment, cutting agencies that way. Those are all great ideas. The challenge that I have noticed is that even in states where you see budgets that sunset and the agencies have to go and they have to re-justify what they've been spending money on, it's easy for legislators to just say, yep, sounds good, rubber stamp, you re-justified everything, same amount of money as last year or more, unless you give them specific examples of waste happening inside those agencies.
Yeah.
And so what we wanted to do with Project Momentum is to give some specific examples of ways we could save money. And it's not to say that these agencies are all functioning poorly. It's just to say, here are the examples of things that we could be doing better. TV screens that are being purchased for $5,800 a pop, which is a real thing in the state of Mississippi, unfortunately. And those same TV screens are being purchased by the federal government for about a couple thousand dollars, even as wasteful as the federal government is. We wanted to give details like that about that IT contract to be able to say, all right, here's where you should be asking your questions when you get those agencies in their appropriations hearing, and this gives you a reason to dig in and to force them to get tighter in their budget and to be more efficient.
So just explain to the audience, it just means you start over every year. You don't start with last year's budget.
That's right.
And then adjust from that, assuming that you need it every time you got last
right.
year and all the previous years. No, you start with, you got nothing. We need you to justify what you need, and then we essentially authorize that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that just has to be, as much as it is a legal change, that also has to be an attitude change for the appropriators. They have to walk into the appropriations hearing saying, we're going to pretend like we gave you $0 last year. Now go. Now tell me why you need the money that you're asking for.
More effort. And brain power involved in that process.
Yeah.
But it's, I think, would be a worthy exercise. The governor, I'm sure you've seen his budget recommendation,
yes.
which came out, I think, Friday,
yep.
if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And it's slightly down from the prior year. You know, the governor wants to eliminate the income tax. The lieutenant governor seems to be more focused on the sales tax on groceries. I think the Speaker of the House is kind of, how about a hybrid sort of deal?
Yeah.
But. And we're still generating handsome, tidy revenues. We could afford some cutting for sure. But
that's exactly right.
We need to get more money back in the pockets of the people. But we could take even further steps, I believe, to your report. That's what you're pointing out.
That's exactly right.
To give us that spending model that we need that would allow us to cut taxes.
Yep, that's exactly right. So if you look, great point about the governor's budget. I forget what his number was, but he had specifically cited some number of hundreds of millions of dollars that could be redeployed against a tax cut because our revenues have been up.
Yep.
So then let's say you coupled that with all the savings that we found in Project Momentum, which was about $335 million worth of recurring waste every single year. If you did that, you're talking about getting to exactly what some of these guys are discussing, which is eliminating the grocery tax and cutting income tax at the same time. So there's a road forward here, but we have to be smarter about how we spend money. We have to be more frugal. We have to figure out ways to get those cuts done. And then we have to make the smart decision about deploying those dollars against things that actually matter to real people. Tax cuts, roads and bridges, cops on the street, teacher salaries, those things that make a difference in real people's lives.
Half or slightly more than half of our general fund budget goes to education.
Yep.
A lot of that, of course, the lion's share of that's K-12.
Yep.
Always been a lot of discussion, as you know, about some pursuing some school district consolidation. We've got considerably more districts than we have even counties. Now,
that's right.
Sometimes that's understandable just because of the population and the student population served. It just makes for a better model. We've got some opportunity here, though, do we not, to consolidate?
I agree. But I would say this, too. Consolidation on its own does not achieve the savings that you want.
I've said that here on this show many times.
It's very important to realize that this waste is really sticky. It's hard to get rid of.
Yes.
So we see situations in Mississippi where two school districts, a municipal one and a county one, have consolidated. And if at the end of the consolidation, all you have done is change the labels on the buildings, you have not achieved savings. If you don't fire anybody or let people retire and not refill their positions, you have achieved no savings. Instead of taking two purchasing clerks and turning into one, you still have two purchasing clerks. You haven't saved any money. So, you can consolidate and save money, but it takes another step. You have to have good local superintendents who are willing to say, nope. You know what? We're going to use this opportunity to get leaner and more efficient and dump those dollars into the classroom. That's hard.
And then you've got school district boards
yep.
as well that want to stay in power. And so you talk about consolidating districts. What does that look like, you know, when you start consolidating those boards? Now, that's not so much an expense perspective as it is the governance of the districts.
It's a political problem, right?
It's a big-time political
problem. Local political problem.
Yeah.
There are ways to get at this, though, and it goes – one of the ideas, again, goes back to the idea of requiring 50% of every dollar to go toward teacher salaries. That would be a boost of tens of millions of dollars immediately. And then you would put – you would put a roadmap forward for these school districts, and you would say, all right, this is where you got to get, and we're going to put some buffers on either side of the road so you can't go outside that. We're going to have to get serious about this, or we're going to continue spending money in a way that is inefficient. And I've said this over and over again, if we want better results in Mississippi, if we want to do justice for our children who are in our public schools and spend money on them wisely, we're going to have to change a few things.
Yeah.
What's the definition of insanity according to Einstein? Is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We're going to have to change a few things. But if we do that, we can, I think, achieve some really amazing results. And you're seeing it. You know, you saw it in 2013 with a few policy changes in the third grade reading gate. Our reading scores started to tick up a whole lot. We need to keep making those kinds of changes, pushing money into the classroom and outside of the programs that just benefit, you know, adults and adult employees of the school districts, and that's how we get there.
The way to achieve, I believe, the governor's goal in his most recent budget, literally, folks, this was just published late Friday. You know, we got the income tax being phased down through the end of 26 to 4%, one flat bracket. 4% all taxable income above $10,000. He's calling for that to be reduced to 3% for fiscal year 26. And then he wants to phase out the 3% in increments of 2% and 1% through 27 and 28. He says we can get to zero by 29, but I think the path to getting there is to take some of these spending cut actions.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think what he's setting out is reasonable if you do the spending cuts. You could also think about it this way. You know, if you eliminated the state income tax, the last time I looked at the numbers, it would take us kind of back to the budget that we were in FY14 or so. So about 10 years ago. That's not adjusted for inflation, but that shows you that not that long ago, we were kind of spending about that much money. And depending on which census numbers you believe, we may have had more people in Mississippi back then than we do now. You know, so government services serving an equal or smaller number of people.
Expense going up.
But expense going up every year. That's the kind of thing that he's talking about in that budget. If our population is relatively stable, our revenues keep going up every year, we got to use that money in a way that benefits people, that benefits the folks who are working, paying their taxes, going to Walmart, shopping, going to church, following the rules, doing the right thing every day. Those are the people that keep Mississippi going. That's what we got to start thinking about.
Anything for us before we complete our talk that's going on at the state auditor's office? Any updates there?
I just got an investigations update this morning, so a lot of arrests, unfortunately. You hate to see it, but a lot of arrests coming up here in the next little while. And I'm going to continue talking about this, you know, Mississippi's DOGE, basically, the project that we just finished as we lead up to the legislative session, because my hope is that legislators will look at it and they'll take it seriously, that we'll finally cut funding for these DEI programs, that we'll finally get money going to where it can make the most difference for Mississippians.
Well, just kind of thinking how the dots are connected before we go here, I'm thinking if we can eliminate some of the crazy, frivolous, wasteful, unnecessary spending, eliminate the income tax, draw more investment into the state by businesses, we can start keeping some of the graduates who we're paying to go to educate.
100%.
And we're subsidizing the other states with that money.
Atlanta should send us a thank you note every year for all the graduates we send there. Hey, man, this has been fun.
Appreciate it.
Avoid that meth monkey. Stay away from it.
Auditor Shad White has been our guest in the Element Well studio. We're coming right back. Stay with us.
From the middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
I went to a
garden party to reminisce with my old friends. A chance to share old.
Okay, I want you to know, Will, I really like that song. There's only one problem with it. That's one of those songs that creates an ear bug. That'll be in my head for a week now.
It's one of my favorites.
It is a good tune.
I sing it all the time.
I told you, because it gets in your head.
I know.
It's got one of those tunes, those melodies that just kind of sticks with you there, the cadence. But that's the great Ricky Nelson.
Or Rick Nelson.
Rick Nelson.
Well, I think he had switched.
Yeah.
By the time
that's
come
right.
back, he'd switch back to Ricky.
Ricky, yeah.
Yeah.
He, of course, of Ozzy and Harriet show fame.
Yeah.
From the 50s, I believe.
One of the first people that kind of was a child star that kind of became a...
Yeah, an adult star.
An adult star, yeah. You know.
And that was a very popular tune.
Yeah, and that was right before he died, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He died in a plane crash, I believe.
Seems like that's right,
yeah.
As I recall. But we're back with you, though. So I wanted to just clarify something, because I don't think I did this in a way that was clear. And I was just talking about the phasing out process right now underway. Phasing down the income tax in Mississippi. Remember, that was enacted a couple of years ago. First thing that happened in the first year was eliminating the 4% bracket. That's all taxable income between $5,000 and $10,000. And then taking a bit of a hatchet, if you will, to the top 5% bracket, reducing it over 3 years to 4%. So what the governor's proposed presently, by the way, the current tax rate, in this fiscal year, 4.7%. It decreases to 4.4% in 25, and then it goes down to 4% in 26. What he's proposing is to augment that 0.4% that would be eliminated in 26 to bring it down to 4. He's proposing, well, let's just go all the way to 3. Okay, so it's essentially a bit of an overlap with the current phase down, adding an additional percent to that to get it to 3. And then he says, let's go to 2 in 27 and 1 in 28 and 0 in 29. That's his plan. That's his proposal. Now, I haven't seen any models, financial models, of what that would look like when you think about having 3%. Individual income tax rate in 26 is what it would be, and then 2 in 27. But certainly based on data from the Legislative Budget Office showing our revenues are ahead of last year, slightly lower than sine-die estimates, and that's through the month of October. So the first 4 months of the fiscal year, it began July 1. Bottom line is it's providing some room for further reform to the income tax. Now, the governor I think he's pronounced that he prefers that that type of tax reform over right now prioritizing that over reducing the sales tax on groceries. So you see how the three top lawmakers in our state, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the speaker of the House, they're not quite all on the same page, I think it's fair to say,
yeah.
With respect to tax reform. You know, we had the lieutenant governor in here a couple of months ago, and he said that his priority was reducing the income tax on groceries, sales tax, pardon me, on groceries, that he felt that was more attractive. And he could certainly support that with more vigor than income tax reform. That's what he said. Of course, that opens up a can of worms is what do we do with the municipalities that receive those diversions because they would lose that income, which would...
And that's where they're getting squeezed.
Yeah, it'd blow a hole in many of them, their budgets, and they're saying, okay, legislature, if you're going to do that, you got to make us whole. I've seen some proposals that say, no, we're not going to make you whole. We're just going to allow you to layer on additional sales taxes as you see fit to produce that revenue at the municipal level without having permission, being authorized by the legislature to do so. So this is no doubt, you know this, when we get into the next session, this is going to be front and center. there's going to be a lot of deliberation and a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about tax reform, further tax reform in Mississippi, because the governor's setting that agenda, honestly, with his budget. So I welcome it. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. I do think that it just gives us another arrow in the quiver, so to speak, to attract more investment in our state, so desperately needed, so that we can keep some of these fantastic, more of these fantastic graduates our universities are producing that, to a great extent, we're funding. We're subsidizing the other states. That's what I was saying with the auditor there. We're sending all our money to the capital, and they're appropriating it out to the universities. They're graduating these fantastic young people. And, man, they're across the border before the ink's dry on their diploma. We need to keep them here. That's how we continue to grow our economy.
Yeah.
And that's how we get a return on that education investment. And that applies at the K-12 level as well. I'm all for, just like the auditor pointed out, fantastic strides and improvements have been made, that no doubt. It's gotten national attention, what we've done in K-12 education in Mississippi. But let's be honest, most of that, if not all of that K-12 curriculum is really geared towards a student going to college.
Yeah.
They go to college, they graduate, and they leave the state. We're not really getting any return for that improvement when that happens.
And more out-of-state students are coming to Mississippi to get their education.
And then go back.
The Wall Street Journal wrote that article a couple months ago about how states like Mississippi are really benefiting from a lot of these crazy northern universities that have just gone off the rails. Also, the tuition's cheaper, the cost of living is cheaper while you're a student, all this kind of stuff. But if they're not staying here, what's the big benefit?
Yeah, we need more ways to attract them, and that's jobs and quality of life that they're looking for, the sorts of amenities they're looking for at that age.
Yep.
And hopefully we can do that. Something else has happened at the federal level. You may have seen the report on this, folks, that the dadgum Pentagon, once again, can't find all their money. It's just insane. It's just totally insane. They failed their audit for the seventh year in a row. $824 billion budget. They can't find it. Well, they can't I shouldn't say that. That's a mischaracterization. They can't pass the audit, meaning they can't fully account for all the money they were appropriated. Where the heck did it go? I don't know. Maybe it sounds to me like we should just say, well, you're not getting any more until you provide us some substantiation of where all this money went.
How much was it again?
$824 billion last year. It's insane. It's just it's unthinkable that this could happen.
An audit. They can't pass
right.
An audit.
They can't put their hands on all the assets, and they can't really account for just the audit trail of the money came in, it went to here, here's the justification, here's the substantiation. You just can't do it. That's just beyond belief. If a public company had this sort of problem, they're bankrupt. I mean, the market says, you're gone. We're not giving you another dime if you got what's called a qualified opinion from your audit firm, your third-party audit firm. Typically, it's going to be one of the big four that audits these public companies. And they come in and issue what's called a qualified opinion, meaning, yeah, we can't guarantee you that these financial statements are accurate. You just lost the entire market. You're bankrupt that day, should that ever happen. But yet, the Pentagon, we keep shelling more money at them. This makes no sense. This is what frustrates Americans. There's no doubt. And it's been going on a while, by the way. So you got to be honest. This has been going on even going back to the Trump administration.
Seventh. They do it every year, I'm guessing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's an annual audit. So it goes back to even the Trump administration. Finally, though, more news and more exposure about this we're seeing at the present time. This no doubt is going to get the attention of Musk and Ramaswamy, who, by the way that process works, that's not a federal agency. They're not receiving any taxpayer money. They are to work with the Office of Management and Budget, presenting their findings to them, who is supposed to then turn around and report that to the Congress as input to the lawmaking process. They can't They don't have the power to go shut an agency down or fire an employee. They don't have that power. But I actually wish they did. But they can recommend that. And I think that's what we're going to see. Just much like what the auditor just talked about. He's got a big report.
Publicize some of this stuff that you don't know about.
Yeah. Like we're already seeing it. It's already getting attention. Right? Just this what we were talking about with the – who knew that Ole Miss was getting all this money to study monkeys on meth? Did you know that? Right here in our own state. And that makes it in the New York Post. I know. It's insane. It's insane. What value is that to society?
Monkeys on meth. Oh.
Isn't that kind of cruel to put the monkeys on meth? Where are the animal rights people? It's crazy. Drag shows in Ecuador. I mean, who? I don't even get it. I really don't. The one I remember I talked about last week.
Look, if you're at least going to sponsor a drag show, at least do it in the in U.S. of A, you know?
It's, yeah,
keep
right.
the money in the border.
It's a double in your eye.
I
right?
decided to go to Ecuador
to study drag queen. We got plenty here. We're coming right back.
Please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk, Mississippi.
Well, I built me a raft if she's ready for flow. Oh, Mississippi, she's calling my name. You're jumping that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on fast just the same.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays, a little Doobie Brothers. So this just in, this will really make folks' blood boil, Will. You know, they got the trial going on of the murderer of Lakin, the alleged. At this point, murderer of Lakin Riley, the Georgia Tech student, I believe, that was murdered while on the Georgia campus. So the roommate of the alleged murderer testified today, just a few minutes ago, that they both received taxpayer-funded flights to Georgia.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable. That'll make your blood absolutely boil right there. And the present administration just acts like nothing's happening. Pays no attention to this. This is what incenses Americans. It's why the Democrat Party got summarily defeated at the ballot box a couple of weeks ago. This is exactly what people are sick of and what they want to see fixed. It's just incredible. Meanwhile, we have homeless veterans in this country. But yet we're giving free flights to murdering illegals. I can't even reconcile it. I really can't. James in Hattiesburg on the C Spire text line says, does lowering state income tax mean less employees at the State Department of Revenue? I can see potentially, James, where complete elimination of the individual income tax could, but lowering... still have, honestly, the same amount of processing and workload because everybody's filing tax returns.
Yeah.
So eliminating it would. But that, honestly, that's not that big of an agency. It has a very small budget. Any amount helps. I totally agree. So somebody else asked me a question. Oh, yeah, here we go. Gerard, you justified the superintendent of education's salary in the past. Let me stop right there. No, I never justified it. You didn't listen to what I said. It's not what I said. What I said is I support free market determination of pay for certain positions in government. I'll give you this proposal. He said, and by the way, he goes on to say, do you no longer support that position being so highly paid in Mississippi? I think we ought to get the person who could do the most, the best job, provide the greatest benefit to students, teachers, parents, and the citizens of Mississippi at whatever the market deems is the appropriate compensation. I never justified the prior superintendent's pay or the superintendent's pay in general. I do think that for that amount of money, we should get more value. I have been critical of that. So I'll put this proposal out there. What if you could hire an Elon Musk or a Vivek Ramaswamy and it costs $2 million a year to get them? Would that be worth it? When you consider a $7 billion budget, could we get $2 million worth of value from them? Probably, honestly. Now, they're not education experts, but I don't think you have to be to do that job. I don't think that necessitates having a background in education. That's a management position. And it's an organizational management position. And it's a big budget. It's more of a financial endeavor as much as it is education. You could surround yourself with people that do that. So if you limit the pay, you're going to limit the qualifications, honestly. You're going to limit the capabilities of the people, the pool of people and their capabilities. I'm for the free market working here. That's all. And I would also point out that this is probably the hardest state in the whole union to be the superintendent of education because of all the many challenges that we have in the state to educate our population. And part of that is low teacher pay. Maybe if we raise teacher pay, which would cost taxpayers more, we get more qualified people entering the teaching profession. It's a plausible theory. I don't know that anybody's ever investigated that. So that I guess it's the private sector person in me speaking out here that I think the market should dictate what the pay be, not some lawmakers in the Capitol. Well, I think we ought to pay them that. I don't think that's the best model. I just put it that way. I also think we ought to allow variable pay, bonus pay, in the state of Mississippi. We don't do that. Maybe you have a much lower salary, but you have a fairly significant opportunity provided you achieve certain objectives. Folks, we're out of here today. Thanks for joining us. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors is next. Back with you tomorrow with Will again. Until then, stay safe and God bless.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.